everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Drunk Friend Podcast, episode 104. I'm your host, Travis, and I'm joined by none other than the Razor Ramon impersonator, Alex Snesdrunk himself. Hello, Alex.
Yo, how's it going?
There it is. There it is. I love to hear the yo. So good. And we brought along for the ride, when I think of the year 2004, I think of no one else besides Josh Leslie. I don't even think of, like, George Bush. I think of Josh Leslie, who's with us today. Josh, how you doing, man? Thanks for hopping on.
Oh, yeah. I've been really excited. I've been waiting by the phone for a while to be on here, so I'm really excited to talk with y'all. Yeah. Maybe I can finally pronounce my name correctly. For once.
No guarantees.
Leslie. When you say you're waiting by a phone, I assume it's a phone from 2004. So it's like a phone on the wall in the kitchen.
It's a Garfield phone. It's a Garfield phone. You know, the eyes move and stuff. Don't forget to mention what I'm most known for. I don't know if you want me to kick this off here. 1994, seminal cover for One Inch Masters by Gas Huffer. That is where my claim to fame is. Everybody knows. That's where they know me from. So I'm glad you guys... I'm finally doing some interviews about this this album. You know, it's been so long. Yeah. So.
And this is 2004 being the 10-year anniversary, so we're glad to have you here for that.
Are you going to sue the band like the baby from the Nirvana cover did and be like, hey, this is exploitation, man?
No, I'm just going to look at them and go, never mind.
Well done. Well, in case anyone, if that flew by you and you missed it, Josh Leslie, our guest today, has his adorable child face on the cover of a band's album, the band named Gas Huffer. And what were you, 4 years old? Three?
Yeah, you're four. Little guy. I remember like little glimpses of it, like, you know, back in the day, but like, yeah, it's just something that my cousin's boyfriend was in a band and he needed something that looked very grungy. And there you go.
Oh. Yeah. Wow. You're an icon.
Yeah.
You really are.
I know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. Well, thanks for jumping on the show. Hey, you know, we gotta hit all the other marks too. You know, you mentioned earlier on IndieQuest. That's a podcast here on the network. We've had some other IndieQuest guys on here, but let's hear it from you. What's going on with IndieQuest? It was your idea, after all. How's it been going?
Oh, yeah. It's a fun show. We talk about indie video games, obviously, by the title. I had this idea a long time ago because I'm kind of like, when I first started doing podcasting, I was kind of in the Cartridge Club community. I'm like, why don't we do like a Game of the Month podcast about indie games? And then I talked to Travis about it and he's like, no, that's a dumb idea. Why don't we do something a little different? And then you kind of helped me mold it, you and Steve, into kind of like a cool show where we have two segments where it's kind of like a main quest and a side quest. It's all about bringing positivity and showing people games they probably haven't heard about. So I've been enjoying that show quite a bit. We've had some interviews and some reviews. The latest episode is a review from a series called To the Moon series, which we dubbed the Mooniverse. I don't think the devs are privy to that. Yeah, I don't think so. But we had Caleb J. Ross on there to talk about the third in the series. And that's the latest episode on the feed.
With his schedule?
I know.
It's hard to book. This book tour he's on, you can't get him. Well, good for you guys.
Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun, and we always try to mix it up with, like, I think Seth was talking about doing our music episodes, so we have those occasionally, and it's just all things indie. If you're, like, you want to play some games, and you look through, like, the Steam, you know, release window, and you're like, there's 500 games, what do I even play? Go listen to a few episodes and get some recommendations. That's what it's all about.
Heck yeah. Highly recommend, because I too have discovered plenty of good games. You guys, you cut through the, what do the people say? The chafe, the chaff, you cut through the whatever. You cut through the shaft and you get to the good stuff.
Shaft.
Sounds right. I don't think it's the shaft.
You don't think it's the shaft?
It's the chaff.
Chaff.
Yeah, we're not cutting any shafts here. Sorry.
Let's not do it.
Let's not do it.
Well, let's get into 2004 then, shall we? Where do you want to kick it off here, Alex? Dealer's choice. I don't know. You're the dealer today.
We could knock out sports real quick, if that's all right.
I have to do it. Now to Alex with sports.
Thanks, Trav. Today we've got Patriots beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl. That's the game where McNabb puked and T.O. played on a broken leg, basically.
Crazy. Crazy stuff.
He was an insane person that seriously, like, slept every single night in a cryogenic chamber of some kind. Not a cryogenic chamber, but like one of those... What is a cryogenic? It's like from like Star Trek. One of those like isolation chambers where the temperature goes way down and it's supposed to lower your body temperature. It's really dangerous. But he did that like every night leading up to the Super Bowl just to help his leg heal. Dude's a lunatic.
Yeah.
But, and not only that, like he played and he was the best player on the field. He had like 9 catches for 150 yards or something like that.
With, with a noticeable gimp too, right? Like he was limping after every catch. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
nuts.
Especially towards the end of the game. Yeah. Yeah, so that was when I think of that Super Bowl, that's the only thing I think of. Well, I think of McNabb upchucking in the huddle when they're supposed to be driving to you know, win or take the lead or whatever, and your quarterback pukes. It's like, that's not a good omen.
No, but, that's not great.
But, yeah, T.O. playing on a broken leg was crazy. And also that year in the NFL, Peyton Manning set the single-season touchdown passing record. I never thought that record would ever be broken at that time. Now it's going to get broken like 6 or 7 more times, you know, in our lifetimes.
He also broke the record for most forehead. I think.
Yes.
I don't know if it was that year or the year before, but
I think later on, I want to say in like 2015, he ended up getting the red forehead award because his forehead is like, it's almost like a blaze orange. Like the guy doesn't need to dress up when he goes hunting.
I was going to say it's like a hunter safety forehead. That's pretty good.
Anyway, we've got USC destroying Oklahoma. That was the... Yeah. USC team that had like Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush. They were just loaded with talent.
Yeah.
Baseball was crazy again. 2003 was better from an objective fan standpoint, but 2004 had Boston coming back from down three games to none in a series against the Yankees to go to the World Series. They won 4 straight, becoming the first team in baseball history to ever do that, which I hate the Red Sox, but I really hated the Yankees back then. Like, I really hated them. So
everybody was watching that too. Everybody when it was down 3-0 and there was no chance, people were like, "Well, if they pull it off, it'd be cool." And they got a lot of attention.
It was the way they did it too. I mean, one of those games went to the 15th inning. Mm-hmm. Another one went to like the 12th, I think. They were these games were ending at like 1 a.m. and then they're going to be playing again at 6 at night the next night.
And I remember game 3, the Yankees destroyed the Red Sox to go 3-0.
And
like 19 runs.
I was so annoyed with that because, I was so sick of the Yankees at that point. I wanted anybody but them.
Yeah. But, Josh, I know you're not a big sports guy, but do you remember that? Was that a big enough story to affect you at all, the Yankees-Red Sox ordeal? Going to take that as a no.
No, I'm sorry. I don't really know much about this. This is like one of those things where I listen to the podcast and I'm like, Alex is just educating me. Like, I don't really know anything about this stuff, you know?
It's just, I mean, once I get this stuff like from Wikipedia, basically, then at that point, it's like, what are my own personal memories of this stuff? And I remember Boston and New York being like a massive deal. For the next few years after that, too.
Yeah. As soon as we kicked over to Alex with sports, Josh busted out his launch day DS and just started playing games. He's just like,
launch day DS.
Page me when I'm in.
That's awesome. Let's see here. The Pistons beat the Lakers. Again, a great year for people you're sick of to watch them lose. Because I was sick of Shaq and Kobe. So to see the Pistons beat them was really nice. And then we also have Tampa beating Calgary for the Stanley Cup in a surprisingly really good series that went all 7 games. I really wanted Calgary to win, but they did not. And then right after that, a lockout began in the NHL. The owners locked out the players because there was no agreement to play for stuff. I'm not very good at describing that stuff, but it ended up costing the entire 2005 season, which has never happened, I think, ever.
I just imagine lawyers talked about it. They were like, stuff isn't, we're not agreeing on the stuff, guys. The things aren't fine, and the stuff's weird.
And stuff's all, well, it's all dumb. It's all dumb. Stuff's all dumb. You also had UConn men's and women's basketball teams win national titles. Man. That was pretty cool.
To be on that campus that year had to be really special.
That had to be nuts, yeah. But yeah, back over to you, Trav.
All right. Let's jump headfirst into games. That's why the people are here. That's what they want to hear about. 2004 PS2 doing pretty good. Now, GTA San Andreas multi-platform, I certainly played it on my PS2, and I famously have not finished that game. I got to one mission that had me going all the way across the map on my bicycle, and I couldn't beat it or whatever, and I put it down, never picked it back up, but damn, I love that game. I would even go work out and get haircuts in that game, because I just thought it was cool.
So for my time period here, I was a freshman in high school. I lived by a neighbor that we came to know him that he had like this big game collection. His name was Kenny. So me and my brother would go over to Kenny's house randomly. I'm sure it was, he seemed fine. You know, he's a post office guy. He's a mailman. So I was like, hey, he seems good. But we'd go over there and borrow games from him. So like all the like rated M games during this time frame were copies I borrowed from my neighbor Kenny. So
Kenny.
Yeah, so that's how I played GTA San Andreas for the first time and Vice City for the first time. And I remember he came home one day. He's like, yeah, I'm getting San Andreas, guys. You guys can borrow it for a week or so before I'm not going to have a chance to play it this week, so you guys can borrow it. So me and my brother were like super stoked. We're like, hell yeah, he's going to get San Andreas. Yeah, so we got to play it like launch day for free, you know, without even renting it from our neighbor. So it was pretty awesome.
I feel like somehow Kenny was trying to scam you, but he never got around to the scam part. I don't know why. That's cool, though.
Yeah,
man.
I don't know. Yeah,
Kenny seems like the kind of guy that would have like two copies of Half-Baked on DVD, too, and he'd just give you one.
I mean, he had a family. Like, I don't know. Like, we just go over there and like... Like, his wife would be chilling, watching a show or whatever. We're just, like, perusing his game selection. And we just borrow one or two at a time, bring them back, and then he just... Yeah, this is pretty much just our own, like, personal blockbuster there, you know?
I want to know where Kenny is now. Sweet. Kenny sounds like a cool guy.
Yeah. He was pretty cool.
Right on. That sounds awesome. So, what were your impressions of San Andreas when you first played it?
I loved Vice City quite a bit. I remember... trying to break the game a lot, trying to go to the island. I know we're talking about San Andreas. San Andreas, the same thing. Like, they lock you out of areas. So you're like, I wonder if I can just get over to the next island and have 5 stars and have all the cheats activated with, like, you know, mini guns and everything, try to just survive as long as possible. But also, I thought the story was really cool and how they had all these systems in it where you can just get buff or you can get fat if you decide to eat a bunch of burgers or whatever, you know? Like, it was pretty cool, like... just the amount of detail, it really was mind-blowing.
I remember the story in that one actually being worthwhile, like worth paying attention to, where as opposed to, like you said, where it's like you're just trying to break the game and get a 5-star rating and get tanks and helicopters after you and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember it off the top of my head. What the story was, I just remember thinking like, hey, this is actually pretty good. Not that I spent that much time with it.
Yeah. Good times. And then Metal Gear Solid 3. Now, Josh, you're a Metal Gear guy, yeah?
Yeah, and I know that this is kind of like, it's a really popular series. It's really well regarded, but I don't think you guys like it, or do you like it? Like, I don't know your opinion.
I've just never really put a lot of time into it personally, but it's like on my get around to experience list, so I don't really have an opinion.
Okay.
First game's good. Everything else can go away forever.
Wow. Okay. You mean the NES one?
Yeah, I don't like the NES one either.
Oh, I thought that was the first one, but you mean the first Metal Gear Solid. I got you.
Yeah, oh, yeah. First Metal Gear Solid, yeah. Not Metal Gear. No, that game can go away, too.
Honestly, to me, I think Metal Gear Solid has the best... Like, if I was to recommend somebody, like, hey, play a Metal Gear game, I would tell them to play 3, because I feel like it is the most updated when it comes to that game... with the story and like combination of everything, like the systems with the camo is kind of weird and janky at times. Like, you have to like do different camos to like hide from the guards and things like that. But I think the story is like, it's like a piece of historical fiction, and you get to be like this badass, super crazy, you know, soldier dude going through. I'm so good at describing things, guys. but going through and
it's like
stopping.
Alex describing a lockout.
Yeah, basically. going through and stopping the first nuclear tank that is able to drive around like a tank. You know, it has tank controls, basically. Like, basically, the whole series is about stopping the nuclear war, and this one's during, like, the Civil... Not Civil War, no. What am I thinking of?
The Cold War.
Cold War, yeah. Okay.
To be fair, that was a fairly civil war, all things considered.
Yeah, so it's during that time period, and
you're
basically...
As far as wars go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're basically Snake, and you have to defeat this group of crazy villains, and there's a dude that shoots bees from his face, and there's, wow. like, the guy that meows like a cat, you know? It's weird. It's a very specific tone, I would say, if you're not into that
That's
tone.
That's a good way to describe it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not into the style and the tone, I get why it's not people's things, but I really like the Metal Gear series, you know? So if you haven't played a Metal Gear Solid, I would say 3 is a good starting point. Yeah, for sure.
So it's not a big deal if you haven't played the others, like the story's nonsensical enough to where it won't matter?
Well, it's like... earlier in the storyline before Metal Gear Solid, so it's kind of like one of those things where they do the prequel.
Oh,
here's the
I see.
And the
okay.
thing, the original Metal Gear Solid, Solid Snake is a clone, literally a clone of the guy that's in Metal Gear Solid 3, which is Big Boss. So yeah, that's the level of storytelling you're going with here. You
man,
know?
If we yep. if Caleb and I ever do a Tales of the Lesser Medium, we're gonna have to call you. We're gonna have to talk it over.
Yeah,
I don't know if I can make heads or tails otherwise.
You'll figure it out. At least it's not Kingdom Hearts. You know, Kingdom Hearts is even worse. So
that's another one you like that makes no sense to me. Man.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with me and the convoluted, ridiculous stories. I just get into it. I love it, you know.
Hey, that's all good, man. Well, Burnout 3, not much of a story, but that's a pretty fun time.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my all-time favorite PS2 games. I think... these next three that are on the list, Burnout 3, Ratchet & Clank, Up Your Arsenal, and Katamari Damacy, are those three are the best, my favorite PS2 games. If I had to pick three, it's those three. And all for pretty similar reasons. They're all kind of really crazy in their own way.
Yeah.
The Burnout experience is always awesome when you get used to... doing the slow motion crash thing, like on the crash courses where you try and cause as much damage. And it's like, okay, if I can ricochet off this bus bench and then off of this lamppost, then I can careen into the face of this gas truck, the giant tank. And if I can get that to explode, that'll add up to another $250,000 worth of damage done. That'll cause a chain reaction to make other cars blow. It, like, makes you like think of like geometry and physics and stuff.
Yeah, it's like terrorist geometry. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. I remember I have a really good memory of playing that game with friends of mine. It was one of those all day gaming kind of things where we all just hung out and played like PC games, PS2 games and stuff. And Burnout was on pretty much all day. And it got to the point where everybody started coming up with stories for different crash scenarios. Like here's old you know, Billy Bob driving his boat named Lucille, you know. here comes this guy in a freaking 1960s muscle car careening out of nowhere. No, Lucille, not the boat. You know, just coming up with these dumb, and everybody's laughing their ass off because they're all delirious from playing video games all day. But yeah, it's
that's awesome.
I have great memories of that game. Like, people just laughing, you know. I love games that are genuinely funny, like that and mm-hmm. like Road Rash 64. Ratchet and Clank, Up Your Arsenal, though, that one is it's a 3D. There's some platforming there. I don't generally like that because it's kind of a pain, but that game it really gets it right with all the crazy weapons that you can use. I always like the tone of those games too.
Yeah,
they're not like deathly serious like Mega Man or anything like that, but they're not cartoony either.
They feel like kind of their own deal. And then, of course, Katamari, that game is just, you know, a fever dream. Just, what is this? How do you even think of making a game like this? It's perfect for the PlayStation controller with the two joypads. It's one of my favorites. Reroll on Switch. I have that. I am excited for We Love Katamari to get the reroll treatment for Switch as well. I can't wait to revisit those. Those games are awesome. If you have not played those, you need to play. You need to get those in your life.
Right on, man. Katamari is amazing. And if you've not checked out the boss fight book about that in that series, pretty interesting as well. Sheds a lot of light on the development and sort of that guy's vision and why it's, I don't know, special. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then we have listed here, we have Spider-Man 2 and Need for Speed Underground 2. And I liked the first one of both of those. I don't know that I put any time into the sequels.
No, I like Spider-Man 2 quite a bit. I think it's one of the first Spider-Man, like superhero games almost, where I felt like I was that superhero, which is really cool. That's the point of those games, right? You want to get the powers of the superhero. And I feel like that was the first time where I was like, I am Spider-Man and I'm kicking ass and I'm swinging around New York. And yeah. It's, you know, it doesn't really, you know, it looks and plays like a PS2 game nowadays, but even me going back nostalgically playing it, I lot of emulators on my Steam Deck and stuff. So I occasionally pop into games like this and just for the feels, you know, and it really does age well for a Spider-Man game. And yeah,
that's cool.
It's a storyline of the game, of the movie, you know, obviously it's just a movie tie-in game, but it's one of the better ones. And for Need for Speed Underground 2, I threw that on here because me and my brother just love both of those games a lot. It's just super fun. It kind of feels like early 2000 neon light, Fast and the Furious, you know, of course I had to throw that in there. But yeah, so it's just super fun to race. And like every single match is like at night, raining, so you can see the neon glow just a little bit more while Get Low is playing in the background, you know, just perfect 2004 fodder, you know.
Right on, man. I played for sure the shit out of the first Need for Speed Underground, like to a sickening point. And the only thing I didn't like about the second one is that they made it a hub world where I had to drive around and get races, which was a fad that existed until today.
Yes.
That's still going.
Yeah.
And I just want to like get in a race, and it kind of burned me out because I'm like, I got to drive 5 minutes to race.
Yeah,
but still cool.
I picked up Burnout Paradise for Switch a while back, and it's the same thing where it's you have to drive around to find stuff to do. It's like, dude, I just want a main menu so I can pick stunt courses to crash in. That's all I want.
Like, right. Yeah,
like, I don't need this thing. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't need this like giant open world. It's freaking Burnout. Like, there's only one reason I'm playing this game.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that wraps up the PS2, and there's more to it. I'm sure when it's out there, like, say my game out loud. Well, you can. No, we're not. We're moving on.
They can, but we're not going to because we hate that game, whatever it is.
Whatever that game is you're thinking of right now, I know Alex hates it, and I'm just not a fan.
Hate. But Xbox, I have very little experience with three of these titles, but there are three popular titles that were released in 2004. There's Halo 2, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Does everything a good sequel should.
Yeah.
Just improves on the original. Doesn't reinvent the wheel. The Ninja Gaiden reboot. Did either of you play this?
A bit.
I've tried it, and it kicks my ass. So it's like
super hard.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, I will say our old guest, Kevin, who was, I don't remember what episode he was on, I guess 90, a while back for old Kevin, that was like his favorite game as a kid.
I remember
as
him,
a dude.
Didn't he mention that?
Yeah, he can like no death run. And like, you know, I wouldn't say he's like an all around like Intuit gamer, but like that's a game that he can just plow, and then he goes back to playing board games all day. It's wild. I feel like to be that good at that game, you also need a track record of like no death running like every Mega Man and having speed run world records. But no, he's just a dude off the street that just fucking whips the Ninja Gaiden reboot.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that game is, I share Josh's experience where I noped out of it pretty quickly because it's like, wow, this game is hard.
I didn't get out of the tutorial. I didn't.
And then there's also Fable, I know that was supposed to be like their, not their necessarily their the Xbox's answer to Zelda, but it's you know, in a fantasy adventure style, you know, meant to be a franchise that can build into other things. I think there was only just a Fable 2, though. I don't know if there was a Fable.
I think there was a third one.
Yeah, there's a third one.
Oh, yeah. There was? Okay.
Yeah, they're working on like a reboot, too, for like the modern platforms. They announced it a while ago. I don't know when it'll come out, but I don't have a lot of experience with Fable myself. I remember my friend playing it a lot to the point where I was tired of seeing him play it, but I never played it myself. So I was like, dude, we could play Halo or something else. Come on, let's do that instead. But yeah.
Me and my old podcast partner Jake used to rag on this game a little bit because of all the Cockney accents and the "Hey chicken chaser, do you chase chickens?" And it's like constant. Like they didn't program the NPCs with more than like 10 lines, so you'll hear that constantly. "Hey chicken chaser." And it's that's all I think about when I see Fable now.
It sounds like Bill Burr making fun of an old woman or something.
Might have been the direction that the voice actors got.
Wow. We want you to sound like an Irish northeastern comedian doing an old woman's voice yelling at somebody.
Got it.
For chasing chickens.
And the GameCube, man, nothing but sequels, huh?
Yeah, we got Metroid Prime 2, Pikmin. Is it Pikmin or I think it's Pikmin?
I go Pikmin.
Pikmin 2, Paper Mario 2, and Beautiful Joe 2. The only one of these I spent any meaningful time with was Paper Mario 2, which is the 1,000-year-old door.
Same with me. It's an incredible game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really liked it. I was never able to finish it, but my old roommate at the time had a GameCube, and I would play this. That was pretty much the game that I played on it. Some people say Paper Mario is like the spiritual sequel to Mario RPG for Super Nintendo, and I never saw it that way. And I think that game kind of proves that it really Mario really is its own thing, and it's. I need to bust it out again because it's been too long. I haven't played it since 2004, probably. So
yeah, all four of these are high on my backlog. I just played through Metroid Prime for the first time, I think last year, maybe year before last. And I needed some time between that and the second one because, I don't know, at some point when you play a Metroid game, you become one with the map. And then for like years after, you can close your eyes and kind of walk through it. And I just needed some time before I downloaded another Metroid Prime map into my head. So
right.
That makes sense.
I'm just curious, what were your guys' like gaming habits at this point? Were you playing like marathon sessions like for like 12 straight hours, or were you just dedicating like a certain amount of time every day? Because what I would do is I would just play for like 12 straight hours and then not even think about that game again for a week, and then be like, oh yeah, I'm Paper Mario 2, I should play that again. And part of that was because the GameCube didn't belong to me. But if I had the choice,
was it Kenny's?
My god,
Kenny,
that guy.
But yeah, that habit did not last very long, though, because once I got my own place, then that's kind of how I evolved into my like ADHD way of gaming these days, which is to play something for 5 minutes, play this for 5 minutes, play this for 15 minutes, play this for 20 minutes, switching between like 20 different games.
Yeah. When I was like I said, I was in high school, so I was a freshman, and a bunch of my friends would come over to my place or my grandparents' place. Cause I was kind of like, I would stay between my mom and my grandparents' place back and forth. And we would just play whatever I would have. And we would just do like a whole Saturday of just gaming and stuff. Cause I was like the only person who had a truck that could drive people around. So I'd go pick everybody up, bring them home. We just play some video games, have some chips, you know, Doritos and Mountain Dew, you know, the whole thing. Yeah. So good times. So to get my GameCube and my PS2, I actually worked summers with my grandfather doing like, he said that we helped him do contracting work, but really we were just like, Bubba, go pick that up. bring it over here, you know, that type of thing. Like, go find my three-quarter inch driver, you know, stuff like that. And I would just be like helping him in the background. We weren't doing like manual labor, but he would still give us like, you know, if we come out, help him out for 4 or 5 hours, he'd give us $50. And then I just like slowly would use that toward video games. And I bought all of my GameCube games myself and all my PS2 games, except the ones I borrowed from Kenny, I bought for myself. So yeah, it was a nice little thing for me to learn about responsibility at the time, which I, looking back on it now, I see that as a kid, I was like, nobody would buy me anything, but I had to earn it and actually work for it, you know, and I was a little kid, you know, so, but it worked out pretty good.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. And plus you were freeloading on Kenny on the side, so you had it made, dude. You had a good setup. Yeah. I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, I mean, and Blockbuster was still around too, so you could always go rent a game and check it out, so.
Yeah, man. I was a sophomore in college, freshman, sophomore. I was whatever year. I don't know what year it was. 2004? I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I went between sophomore and freshman of college. So I spent a lot of time in my dorm just playing games with my bud. But we only had one TV in the dorm, so there was like a bit of a shift to it. Like when he was in class, I would play. When he got out of class, you know, I'd pass it off, and then we'd play some games together. And I mean, he's a lifelong friend. We're still buddies. I'm actually chatting to him on the side right now while I'm talking to you guys. But we played a ton of games, but I don't remember like long sessions because I think us being sports bros, I think we just ended up playing a ton of NCAA against each other. And that's like the longer sessions I remember is just playing like 10 straight games in a row. And because we'd be like, he'd win one, I'd win one, he'd win one, I'd win one. It was like, well, we keep getting tied, so we need to play until one of us is the clear victor and skip dinner until we figure it out. So good times. That's what I remember. But I didn't play a lot of like games from this era other than like San Andreas. I didn't play a lot of new games. So I missed out on 2004, like in 2004.
Right. I mean, I love Smash Brothers. I know that's not this year, but like GameCube, Smash Brothers with the buds was always something that was going on. So
yeah,
ever since, yeah, that's always been one of my favorite like party games. So, I mean, I know it's not 2004, but yeah.
Anybody play Legend of Zelda Four Swords Adventures?
Not really. I just put it on there because it used the Game Boy Advance as a controller, I thought was really cool. I never saw it in person, but yeah. And then there's also Metal Gear Solid, the Twin Snakes.
Yeah, Josh, what's the story to that one?
The story to that one.
Yeah. Briefly. Can you do it in two sentences? I doubt it.
Yeah. Okay. So they remade the first Metal Gear Solid from PlayStation 1, but it's way more anime and has a lot more action and has a first person mode.
Wow. Huh. I think there might have been a semicolon in there, but I'm going to take it. I'm going to count it. That was good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. And you liked that one. That was a good one?
It was good, but it had a different director, so there were added scenes to, and it changed the tone a bit, which made it more, like I said, more like an anime, which some people like it, some people don't. I do think it's a pretty solid, like, remaster-ish. It has better graphics and updated controls for the time.
Right on. So this one is, you're saying it's more solid. So this one's technically Metal Gear Solid. The other one is Metal Gear Soft, you're saying.
Yes. Sure. Let's go with that.
We had to go a long way to get to that joke, man.
You guys are welcome.
A long way.
You guys are welcome. Game Boy Advance. More Metroid. Zero Mission.
Zero Mission. That's the remake of the first Metroid. And it's, I will never go back to the original Metroid because Zero Mission is way, way better. Kirby and the Amazing Mirror is one of my favorite Kirby games. It's just one of those huge sprawling type games with tons of stuff to do. I think it lends itself really well to Game Boy Advance, like the start and stop nature of portable gaming. And then Mario versus Donkey Kong. Have either of you guys played that one?
Oh, absolutely, man. I try to soak up this series. After I discovered that the Donkey Kong Game Boy game was not just Donkey Kong, I was hooked on this recipe.
Yeah, and it was this. I didn't realize when I was looking into the Donkey Kong 94 game, like, wow, it spawned like this big series of like other stuff. And this is kind of the start of it. It's the puzzle platformer for folks that don't know. And I love games like that. So, yeah, it's so much fun. I've been meaning to do a video on it for a long time. I don't know why I don't.
Get it together, man. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Making videos about other games?
Yeah, probably, but yeah. I need to do it about this game because people need to know about it. It's one of those games where I don't think it was all that popular because, for one thing, the title is just Mario versus Donkey Kong. Like, what? Like, we've seen that, right? Like, isn't that what Donkey Kong is?
Oh, true. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what are we doing here? Like, what is this? So I think I mean that's my logic. Like, I would have ignored it just based on that. But yeah, it's one of the best, probably 10 best Game Boy Advance games if I had to pick one, if I had to say so.
And then the Game Boy Advance, you know, in its twilight, I guess, the Nintendo DS launches. Two friggin' screens, are you kidding me? Wow.
Yeah.
You know what the DS stands for, right?
I didn't for a while. An embarrassing amount of time went by before I was like, get the fuck out of here, man. Dual screens.
Oh, I thought it was Dick Swingers, you know?
I thought it was Deli Sandwich.
That's what I thought. But apparently,
you know, it folds together like a sandwich, but right? You know, Dick Swingers makes a lot more sense.
Oh, I used to store my ham in my DS, and that made a lot of sense to me.
There you go.
But you know, now that I'm looking at this, man, fucking three Metroid games in a year? Are you kidding me, Nintendo? Then we don't get. Now we go years.
Yeah. No. We're on however many years of, you know, we had Dread.
Yeah,
that was
a
few years ago, but other than that, it's been slim pickings. But yeah. That's kind of an interesting thing. But Metroid Prime Hunters for DS, it's a launch title. Really good use of that second screen where you're basically using the stylus to aim. It's a really cool idea, really good game. I didn't get very far in it. I've only played it at like Funko Land Demo Station. You know, one of those kiosk type things. Yeah. I used to spend all freaking day at Funko Land just messing around with games and stuff like that, but that one really stuck out to me because of the way the touchscreen was used.
That's another one that's high on my get around to it list. I just haven't yet. So many games out there. Most of them came out in 2004. I'm finding. PC wise, we got we got some great stuff here on the PC. This is a good year for PC.
This is a colossal year. Half-Life 2. You could say what you want. It may not have aged the best, but at the time it was pretty freaking awesome. I'll never forget like getting like just a chill down my spine during that scene towards the beginning where those dudes drop down from helicopters. Like, you're trying to get away on this crappy little like jet ski type thing, like this boat. And then these dudes come down and the music kicks in and then it's like, oh shit, you got to turn around and those dudes are chasing you. Oh, that's one of the coolest moments I've ever seen in a game.
My first head crab experience was legit terrifying. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and not just the first one, like every one of them after that was like not less terrifying. Ugh. And you learn from it too, because then after that you move through the game pretty slowly. You're like, is that a head crab right there? Yeah. It better not be.
They also have those like barnacle dudes that would like grab your head and like drag you upwards towards the ceiling and like eat you. And like the first time that happened to me, I was like, what is going on? What's happening? And then of course you look up and you see the dudes like grabbing you in first person. I think Half-Life 2 is pretty much one of the first person shooter games I had where I felt like I was like surviving in this world, like the whole world was out to get me. And I think how it tells the story was unique for the time, right? Like there's no actual cutscenes. Yeah. Like the cutscenes are the in environment, which was just very mind-blowing. I remember just playing it with my friend Chris, just like, dude, did you see that? What the hell just happened? You know, it's just, it was so good. Yeah.
Is this a game you got from Kenny? Did Kenny let you have this filth?
No, I actually kind of got into PC building a little bit. This one I actually played a little later than 2004. I probably played it like senior year. I started building my own PC and I got into that with my friend. And this was the first game I played on my PC because everybody would talk about it like, oh, Half-Life 2, you have to play it. I remember watching like G4 TV at the time and it won a bunch of awards for like G4 TV awards. I was like, I can't play that. I don't have an Xbox and I don't have a PC. So whenever I was 18 and had the ability to build a PC, this is the first thing I played. This and Garry's Mod, which is on our list here too, which is basically think of like a sandbox playground with just all the Half-Life 2 stuff in it. So you can just like build like weld a freaking head crab to a ball and just throw it around the room and just do a bunch of really ridiculous things with just physics and things inside of like the Half-Life engine, which that was awesome too.
That's crazy. I haven't played much Garry's Mod, but that's neat. Valve, man, I miss them. Miss when they made games.
Yeah. I just want to say quickly one more thing about Half-Life 2 and computer builds. I actually got Half-Life 2 for free when I bought an ATI Radeon something, like 9800, something like that, graphics card. And it came with a postcard that says, hey, here's your Half-Life 2 key thing. I still have it from 2004. And...
That's when Steam like first came out, right?
That's like, that was when Steam like it was right when Half-Life 2 launched. Yeah, you're right.
Damn.
Yeah, I have my Steam badge. It's like the one Steam badge that like I can actually like show off and be proud of because it's like it's almost 20 years now since my Steam account has been there.
Dude, it is kind of crazy to think about the theater that we're talking about was 19 years ago.
And yep.
It doesn't feel like it should be that long ago. There's a little game that came out in 2004. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. I'm having a hard time remembering it. World of Warcraft. Have you?
Wow.
You might have heard of that?
Well, no, I haven't heard of it.
I know there's a movie. Wars. There's a movie called Warcraft. I don't know about World of Warcraft. Anybody?
I think it's more like suburb of Warcraft. Warcraft.
I had a hard time saying it too. It's weird.
Yeah.
World of Warcraft. You know what? I realize now a lot of people just don't say it out loud. You just say wow.
You just say wow. Yep.
Did anybody did anybody fight off an addiction to that at any point in their life?
I've actually never really played this game, to be honest with you. I've never played WoW.
I was too afraid to get too into it because I knew it would just absolutely take over my life. And it's like, no thanks. I'm just going to pass.
Yeah, I dabbled a little bit. I got like a month free. I played it. I collected a bunch of like skins of something. I was like, oh, I could see how this would get people going. And then I thankfully put it down and never went back to it. So I played enough to have a reference point in my mind of what it is.
That's cool.
But a lot of folks love it, and you know, I don't blame them. And then The Sims 2. I don't remember any specific Sims entry. I probably played this one. I don't remember, but
I just. Yeah, it's listed because it sold 80 gazillion copies, and it was one of those games where people that weren't normally into video games were into that game. So
people really bought it because they're like, you know what? I bet in the sequel, we can see them naked. I bet we can see them naked. Let's get it. Let's get the second one.
Never underestimate that. It's gaming history. It's like, oh, you know, there's a cheat code where you can see Sonya in Mortal Kombat, and she's totally naked.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and then there's Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, which I can't even see those words together without thinking of our pal Pam, who's a big fan of this. I didn't realize this game came out in 2004. I didn't realize it was that old.
Yeah, I thought this was way more recent.
No, it's an older game. I played it a few years ago for a different podcast, and Pam was on that podcast, so there we go, full circle.
Look at that.
I thought the game, in modern context, had a lot of good ideas, but it's the actual story behind the game is they're building up this like choice system with all these different branching trees and things, and they just ran out of money and time, so they just had to ship this game. So there's a lot of like janky things in the game, but it has like a really cool system where you can have your own vampire with like different stats and things, and the story changes depending on your choices. And it's like one of the earlier games that tried to do this, and I had a lot of fun with it, but I had to go put a bunch of mods onto the game to make it work at times nowadays. So it's kind of one of those where it's like, it's super janky and it's kind of cool to see the ideas and the world that they were building there. And I do think it's a pretty solid game. I think it's really well done. It's just, I didn't play it at the time. So I feel like if I played it back in the day, it would probably hit me harder, but I did really enjoy my time with it. Like I think 2 or 3 years ago when I played it.
Nice. Interesting. I didn't know any of that. That's cool. All right. Well, I guess that wraps up gaming. I wanted to ask real quick before we segue away from gaming. In 2004 itself, what consoles did you have?
For me, it was PlayStation 2 and
And Super Nintendo, obviously.
Obviously.
And my roommate's GameCube and a PC.
Nice. I had a PS2 and a GameCube and my childhood N64 at the time. So, yeah, I actually had a Super Nintendo, but I left it at my grandparents' house, and there are still games and a console floating around in their storage unit somewhere. So I should probably dig that up sometime. But like, I know my Yoshi's Island I got when I was 5 years old is like in a box somewhere. So I should probably find that someday. But yeah.
Gotta have that, yeah. I had a PS2 and a PS1 and a NES, obviously.
Of course.
I had a PC, but it didn't really like play games. I think I could just barely play like the oldest version of SimCity on it without smoke coming out. And maybe a couple of handhelds. But yeah, I was just kind of curious as to what we were actually dealing with.
You were playing with like the Windows Entertainment Pack, like Ski Free and yep. Fuji Golf and Solitaire and Free Cell.
That's right.
I mean, yeah. This is probably prime era for like Flash animation and Flash games too.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so
I still love Flash games. Like, there's a few that I have like a bookmark or a bookmark folder that I'll go into once in a blue moon and play some Flash games.
Oh, dude, I'd love to see a SNES Drunk video about some Flash games. That'd be fun. Ugh, that'd be a good time. Especially if they're old as hell, like some of these.
Hello, you lovely listener. We're trying something new. This podcast now has a subreddit at reddit.com/r/polymedia. If you're anything like us, when you listen to an episode of your favorite podcast, you often wish you could talk with other listeners and the hosts about the episode. That's what r/polymedia is for. So if you're listening, when you have something to say, head over to r/polymedia and start or join a conversation. YouTube has a comment section, blogs have comment section, and now this podcast has a comment section at reddit.com/r/polymedia. Come talk with us and fellow listeners.
All right. You know, I want to break it up. Let's go into an email, break up 2004 a little bit. Let's hit the inbox, because we've got an email from our pal Brandon. Now, after Brandon, we're going to get back into music. I know people are like, but 2004 music was my favorite music. Well, hold on a minute. We'll get there. But right now, we got to talk to Brandon. Brandon's email is titled Technodrome and Other Things. And I tell you, when that crossed the inbox, I've never clicked harder on an email to open. He says, hi, guys. I got a couple things to bring up with you. First off, curses to Alex for bringing up the damn Simpsons mobile game. You know, I'm going to stop you right there, Brandon.
That was you.
You just cursed Alex innocent. That was me. I brought up the Simpsons mobile game.
I played the South Park game.
Yes, that's right. Anyway, he goes on to say, I played it for a while years ago, and upon hearing him mention it, I decided to re-download it. When I logged back in, I was continuing a storyline about Mayan calendar prophecies. That's how long ago I played that game. And now I'm hooked on it again. Thanks, jerk. And Brandon,
you love to hear it.
Yeah. What's funny is after Alex and I talked about it, I also re-downloaded it and had the same bout with it for about 2 or 3 months. So I finally put it back down. But it is, man, is it addictive? Then he goes on to say, on a recent episode, you talked about the Technodrome as a supreme toy of 1991, I believe. That brought back a ton of memories, as it was my last big toy of my childhood. I remember getting it on Christmas and spending at least 5 hours assembling it and playing with it intensely for a few weeks. I loved shooting pizza discs at it with the Party Wagon, another essential TMNT toy, which we all remember the commercials for that. And he says, but I was also listening to Dirt and Nevermind and stealing cigarettes from older brothers. What an odd crossroads. And I love that.
That's pretty weird.
I do love that. I put him at about 12 there, I think, because I think I'd still want to, like, I'd still shoot discs out of a TMNT toy and then still try to steal smokes off my brother. Then he says, anyway, it got me thinking. Do you ever wonder where your childhood toys are today in a literal sense? Those were all plastic toys, which means they literally still exist somewhere out there, buried deep in a landfill or something. Am I the only one filled with existential dread at the thought of my 1983 Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man and 1986 Wile E. Kit Thundercat figurines just hanging out in some dirt where they'll be for probably thousands of years? No clue as to the decomposition rate for plastic toys. This is what a midlife crisis feels like, I guess. Thanks for all the content, Brandon. And you know what, Brandon? I guess I hadn't really thought about it until you mentioned it, and now I'm filled with existential dread about a lot of my toys.
Yeah, I don't know where my toys are, and I know where the toys that I really liked are, because I was really big into Legos and just any action figure of any kind, especially WWF wrestling figures. And those are all at my brother's house, and the Legos too. All the Legos we had.
Oh, nice!
As far as like all the like G.I. Joe, like random G.I. Joes, mm-hmm. and Star Wars guys, I have no freaking clue. Like my mom probably gave them to somebody. I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
It's crazy though to kind of think about it. Like if you hone in on one toy from your childhood and really think about it, and you think like, when's the last time I saw it? You know, it's all fuzzy. But if you think about it now, I just picture all of my toys just kind of buried in dirt in the middle of a landfill somewhere with birds flying over it, and it's sad.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think that like I wasn't really into toys once I got a Super Nintendo. Toys mm-hmm. just kind of stopped existing because I had video games now. What do I need toys for?
True. Same. Yeah. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, that's how I was with the PlayStation. Like for me, I had a Super Nintendo, but I still played with toys because I was younger when the Super Nintendo. Like I played Mario and, you know, Zelda, Link to the Past, and things like that on Super Nintendo. But the toy I'm thinking of is I don't know if you guys remember this Creepy Crawlers Workshop. Do you even know what that is? Yeah, where you made
Creepy Crawlers. I think the commercial jingle was Creepy Crawlers. Something like
yes!
that.
Yes. Oh, I remember now.
That's the one that came to mind when I was thinking about like this, that era of like TMNT toys and stuff. I know I didn't really have any TMNT toys. I loved the cartoon. And when I was a kid, like they were on in reruns and stuff. But that commercial came on so many times that I just basically begged my mom to get me that when I was like 3 or 4 years old. And I remember just like opening that up Christmas Day. That was one of those like picturesque Christmas mornings, you know, where you're opening up a toy you've been really wanting for so long. So that is one of those classic things that I wish I still had it, but I'm sure like, I don't even know, like, if any of that stuff would hold up that many years later. I'm sure you could probably buy it on eBay for like $200 or something, but yeah.
But mm-hmm. I just looked. You can get a vintage 1994 Creepy Crawlers Workshop still in the box for $50, $20 shipping, or best offer. And it looks like it's been sitting here a while, so you could probably get one if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that the thing where you like pour the plastic stuff into the molds? And it creates the creatures. Yeah. Okay, I remember that.
I liked anything like that with like gooey, gross things. Like I loved Gak and like a Floam and all that stuff. Like from Nickelodeon.
Gak
yeah,
was excellent. Yeah,
yeah, I love that stuff. We'd always just ruin my mom's carpet and get reprimanded all the time. You know, well, it's good memories.
That's 90s kid stuff right there. Only that's yep. It's an experience. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, Brandon, sorry, I don't remember all my toys are, but I'm a little upset that you filled me with such existential dread. I got one G.I. Joe I'm thinking about, and I named him Gary, because I didn't watch G.I. Joes, and I didn't know any of their real names. And I was like, man, I wonder where Gary is. Ah, poor bastard. Anyway, thanks for the email. All right, now to music. Boy, songs. I tell you, man, I don't know if it was just because I was in college, but a lot of these songs really, I love them. And they're nostalgic
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, yeah.
We got yes, right. We got Usher and featuring Lil Jon and Ludacris. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Oh, it's a classic for a reason. And yeah, I mean that's probably one of the first songs that I learned the rap to. So yeah,
it's got what 8 words and 7 of
like
them
that.
Are yeah. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lean Back, which is the first dance I learned. I was like, oh, this is a whole dance. I got this.
Yeah, that song's badass. I love that song. That's like a middle school jam for me right there, like high school jam, you know, love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder if James Hetfield would ever thought of covering that song.
Let's. What would it? Okay, Alec. What would it sound
like? No, I'm not going to do it.
Come on. What would it sound like if James Hetfield did a little cover of Lean Back? Or yeah, or both together.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, 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 yeah.
How is it better than I thought it would be? It's
it sounds great.
It's such a dumb joke.
That's fucking good, dude. Linkin Park, they must have started playing WoW because they were already trying to break the habit. They had that Breaking the Habit song.
That's a good song.
All over the place. Drop it like it's hot. If it's hot, definitely drop it, right? Because you'll burn your fingers.
Mm-hmm. That song's about hot potato.
Yeah, practical advice.
Yep. Yep. Breaking Benjamin, So Cold. That was all over the radio. If you listen to rock radio.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
No idea. I don't know what any of this stuff is.
You've never heard of Yeah by Usher?
Or no, I mean like that Linkin Park song, that Terror Squad song, that Breaking Benjamin song. That
you've definitely heard Lean Back. You might not just recognize Terror Squad.
Lean Back. Lean Back.
Lean
Back.
You've probably heard it. You've crossed paths.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Brightside by The Killers, which I think I only remember mainly from Guitar Hero.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know that one.
Mm-hmm. Everybody liked that one. Now, so those were songs that were played a ton. Everybody heard those. Specifically, what we liked. Now, Alex, I want to cover you for a little bit because you mentioned before we recorded, you're like, listen, I didn't do music in 2004. So what were you listening to? What were you doing?
I was, you know, one of the people that Lars Ulrich really wanted to strangle. I was downloading a whole lot of music. You know, I was way more interested in like finding stuff that I might have missed out on in the 90s or, you know, anything from that my brother and sister listened to from back in the 80s that, you know, it's basically just stuff that you never wanted to, you never had the time to or inclination to get into. And now suddenly this music is available and it's like, well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I had a lot of different phases of like, crazy black metal, like with Emperor and Arcturus and Borknagar and just all these ridiculous bands with, you know, the couch crease looking logos, you know, the old leather couch logos.
I've never heard like that before. That's so perfect.
No, yeah. It's an old meme. But
that's funny.
But there was a lot of stuff like that. But then eventually I got into like dark wave, new wave, 80s stuff like Talking Heads and Susie and the Banshees, and got really into The Cure and stuff like that.
Morrissey and the Smiths.
Hey, I like the Smiths, but I cannot freaking stand Morrissey. He's just nauseating. But,
no one likes both, that's for sure. I've done this poll for years and no one's ever... Yeah. Come full circle on both. Interesting. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Morrissey's got a great voice, obviously. He's got that like 1950s crooner thing going on. He's just a raging douchebag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
fair.
Fair. And then we have the little section called What We Liked. And, you know, there wasn't much here. I mean, I honestly liked a lot of the songs that we already listed that were everywhere. No ill will towards those. But I really liked the super group that formed there. This is kind of a dad take, but I really liked the Slash and Scott Weiland mashup there, the Guns N' Roses with the Velvet Revolver. I don't know if they had more than one album, but Contraband was the album that I had, and I really liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. And they had that song Slither, which I think is probably one of the few go-to songs for me that year. And then also that was, I think Azir Mastodon hit it big, and they're still a favorite band of mine, and Blood and Thunder was a big reason for that. That was a song that kicked off in 2004. So
Yeah, I listed Green Day, Jesus of Suburbia. We're going to get into albums, and this is American Idiot is pretty much the first CD that I bought with my own money. So, I mean, a lot of people go, oh, Green Day Dookie's their first CD they bought with their own money. Yeah, but for me, it's Green Day American Idiot. So this song sticks out to me because it tells It's like one of those longer, like, oh, we're doing like a rock opera. We're telling a story. It's a 9-minute song about this guy that's kind of a burnout trying to find his way in life. And, you know, me being 14, 15 years old, this is like, oh, this is like poetry to me, you know. And it's still a really good song. But like, you know, back then I was like super blown away by it. So.
But yeah, Green Day, American Idiot. That was an album that came out there. Nice segue, by the way. Kudos.
Thanks.
My Chemical Romance. Are you into that, Josh? I'm going to actually assume that a lot of these that you listed here are your bag. Take us through.
Yeah. Almost all these are from me because this is where I started like listening to a bunch of music. So I'll just run through most of these. My Chemical Romance. Really stuck out to me because I got into their music videos first. They were like super dramatic. Like everything was like the biggest, most bombastic thing I've ever heard. And it just blew me away at the time. I'm sure people have their opinions on the band themselves, but I really loved it. And if you have time, just go listen to any, and watch the music videos for Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge. Any of those, they're just really incredible music videos. So I think that's what really sold me on that album. And then Say Anything. This is a band that a lot of these are emo music. I'm sorry. That's just my taste. You know, that's what I like. So Is a Real Boy is this really weird and just it's a sound. It has such a weird sound to it, and it's like weird and interesting and unique. It has a lot of really fun wordplay in it, and I think that it's an album that's unlike any other album that I can like put my finger on. Like even other Say Anything albums do not sound like this. So it's like a very unique like rock album that really stuck with me as a kid. Some really interesting lyrics, I'll just say that, but yeah, it's pretty good. And Linkin Park put out Collision Course with Jay-Z. So basically it was like a mashup album where they would take Jay-Z songs and Linkin Park songs together and like add like Jay-Z like rap choruses into Linkin Park songs, Linkin Park like actual choruses into Jay-Z songs. And they actually had a whole tour and everything. I was really into it. I thought it was such an interesting concept and it actually meshed really well, surprisingly. Check that out if you're into either one of those bands. And then I'll just run through these two real fast. Under Oath, They're Only Chasing Safety, and Taking Back Sunday. More emo fodder, you know, like, I'm a sad boy and I'm 14, 15 years old. The world sucks.
Was this the emo, like, heyday? Was this the pinnacle for you?
Yeah, and actually I would say this is, like, almost like a wave of, like, a bunch of, like, big emo artists, like, that genre where, like, popping off then. This is like when the scene started, so pretty much I would say like around that time frame. I'd say anywhere from 2001 to 2006-7 I would say where it really started kicking off. So this is kind of in the middle of that. But right. Yeah, so all those are just like albums I listen to even to this day. Yeah, I think they're all right worth on, checking out. Yeah, they're actually pretty good albums.
All right, they've all held up. They're all the are they the best ones from those bands? Was 2004 the year that everyone peaked?
No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, Taking Back Sunday, Where You Want to Be is a good album. I really like that album, but I like Louder Now from them, which is their next album that came out. But yeah, they're all really good. Like to me, like this is like if you saw a Josh playlist, these would all be on it most likely. So.
I mean, that's why you're on this episode. I was like, Josh loves 2004. I know he loves the music, and I know he got launched ADS.
It's true, though. When I think of 2004 and I think of like pop culture music, I think of emo stuff. And I think of, you know, bands like Taking Back Sunday and My Chemical Romance and stuff like that. So, but at the same time, that is all a complete and total utter blind spot for me. I've not, you know, I have like no exposure to that music at all. So it's cool to hear about it. See, now, Josh, you are teaching me.
So nice. I mean, I can tell you an album, like I can tell you albums that I thought about putting on here just because I listened to them at the time, but they're not good because they're bad emo music. Like I have a couple of those. If you want to go back and listen to some very cringy emo music, go listen to Hawthorne Heights. Anything from Hawthorne Heights, you're going to be like, this is cringy. Yeah, but I loved it at the time. I thought it was amazing. So you know,
I liked Stabbing Westward when I was 14.
Me too, man. They had that. What was that one song they had?
What do you have to or what do I have to do to make you happy?
Now, what would it sound like if James Hetfield sang it?
to make you happy. Yeah.
I'm not
God, never fails to disappoint every time. So good.
All right. Well, speaking of emo, the first emo movie we have here, I don't guess it's really an emo movie. I was trying to find a segue. But Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is an incredible movie.
Love it.
Got Jim Carrey in it. It's never what anyone ever expects it to be. It's always a little more. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's Charlie Kaufman. I saw it in theaters. I loved it. But I will say, watching it again in my 30s, I liked it a lot less.
Oh, really?
Just because the characters, the Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet, it's like, I don't know. Like, you start, I'm at the point now where I want to start arguing with them on the screen. It's like, why are you doing that? Don't do that. That's utterly stupid. And, you know, I turn into an old man shouting at a cloud, basically, when I watch it now. I still like it, but it hits differently now that I'm older. But when I saw it in, I would have been 22 in 2004. Oh, yeah. I loved that movie.
You can't talk about 2004 and not talk about... And, you know, opinions aside, The Passion of the Christ was a pretty big deal in 2004.
It was.
We got Jim Caviezel. He's out there. He's wandering around. He's having a bad day as Jesus. And he does the whole thing. I did watch that. It's pretty uncomfortable few minutes for me. Everyone else really into it. I was, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe my feelings about it other than like, wow, they really... tried to do the whole thing, didn't they? They put the whole chapter in there.
I watched this with my grandparents, and like they were like, I was like, I'm very uncomfortable. It's just like so gory and like just I don't know. And then I was just like, do I have to watch this? Like, is this like part of my Bible study or something? Like, that's how it felt like watching it with my grandparents, because I, you know, and like they're like, how'd you like the movie? I was like, it was good. Yeah, it was great. You know? And I was like, no, like it was, to me, it was just like an uncomfortable sit. Like, I did not enjoy my time with it back then. I haven't seen it since then. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And isn't there a sequel coming out that I hear? Was that a meme or is that a real thing?
Is it called Easter?
I hope. Easter Strikes Back or something. I don't know.
Easter Strikes Back.
But it was a big deal. And then we got The Village. I saw that in the theater, and I was like the only person in our friend group that kind of liked it. I thought it was kind of neat, and I've been dunked on that for years. And then I took a stand for several years when people would bring it up and be like, "Oh yeah, that movie is dumb, right, guys?" Because but I haven't seen it in a long time. I imagine it probably isn't great, but I tell you, man, that day I thought it was all right.
Was this the first one that he did after Signs, or was there something in between?
That seems right to me.
Okay, yeah, it's like that, and then like Lady in the Water, I think too, was around that time frame
that
too.
Was
dreadful.
Didn't see that one.
Yeah. I was pretty much. I've not seen The Village because I was kind of out on M. Night after this, or after Signs, I should say, because I really did not like Signs. But
I liked parts of Signs. I didn't like the all of Signs. All of Signs was not great. This man, it reminded me. This was like a Mel Gibson heyday. This whole era. All right, so there's The Village. Howl's Moving Castle. That's good.
Awesome. I wish I was a kid when I saw it.
Yeah, we all do. 51st Dates.
It's actually a decent Adam Sandler movie. I would say it's he's dating Drew Barrymore, which she keeps forgetting her life, so he has to keep explaining her life to her every single day. So it's kind of a cute, kind of corny rom-com, but I think it's one of Adam Sandler's better movies. I mean, it's not like the best movie ever, but I watched it so much back in the day. So I just wanted to throw that on there to mention it.
It's kind of ironic because I think I saw 50 First Dates on like 50 different first dates. That was like the movie that everybody wanted to go see or watch. Yeah, sure. I'll fucking watch it. Sure.
That reminds me of watching Hitch. I think I seen Hitch in like four different dates. I went with girls back then. So yeah.
Nice. Napoleon Dynamite. I didn't get it. On the first watch, I didn't get it. There was a lot of hype, and I watched it, and I was like, I don't know, man. But then I watched it like 2 days later for some reason, because I guess the rental, we still had it, and I was like, let me fucking give it another shot. And for some reason, the second time it landed. I was like, oh, I get it. It's that kind of humor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has an uncle that can, you know, totally throw the ball over the mountain or whatever. It's been so long since I've seen that. I forget all the jokes, but it's still weirdly relatable. That's what I like about that movie, is that it's, I don't know, when I see a movie like that, I'm like, oh, I totally went to high school with kids like this.
It's very quotable too. Like, how often are people like, you going to eat your tots? Every day for me. I'm always talking to people that say that to me. Or I sometimes will just drink Gatorade suddenly like that. Just to the side, just chug super hard for no reason, just to see if I can get a rise out of my wife. She doesn't care, but I still do it every time. Dodgeball? I love dodgeball.
Dodgeball, saw that in theaters. That was great.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. Dodge. Clang! Ah, Justin Long.
Oh, so good.
He hasn't aged a bit. If you've seen him in Barbarian, he looks like he just walked off the set of Dodgeball and entered Barbarian. Crazy.
Wow. That's true. My favorite line from that is, nobody makes me bleed my own blood.
Of course. One of the great Ben Stiller lines of all time.
So good. Yeah, that's another one that I haven't quoted in a while, but used to be a mainstay. That was also the year the first Saw movie. Again, another movie like The Village. I went to see with the same group of people. Maybe I just went to see it with a bunch of assholes. But I walked out and they were all like, ugh, so predictable. But I was like, guys, that was cool, right?
Like, I think that movie's cool.
Like this,
yeah, that movie's awesome. Come on.
The first Saw is pretty good.
I thought so.
Everything that came after it that was just awful.
Yeah. Still, I mean, awful in a different way, though. Like, still watchable, but, like, not great.
I think you could say that about, like, maybe 2 and 3, but everything after that is just freaking awful.
I didn't get past like, 3, so maybe that,
like,
that sums
really
it up.
Bad.
The Saw video game is way better than it ever needs to be. It's wild. Hmm. Yeah. Shrek 2.
Yeah, I put that on there, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, it's good.
I'm wearing
Shreks
a Shrek
good.
Shirt. Yeah, oh. I'm wearing a Shrek shirt right now, you know? But anyway.
Wait, you showed a picture of the Shrek shirt in the Discord. Now, what does it say? Because it's funny. What does the shirt say?
It says, Shrek yourself before you wreck yourself.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. But I think Shrek 2 is actually the best of the franchise. I honestly, it's like, so it's basically Shrek. He gets his happily ever after, but does he? And he has to meet his in-laws, and hijinks ensue. And I think it's actually really well written and very funny. I think this movie is probably the funniest Shrek movie. So, yeah, I like it. It's good.
Eddie Murphy's donkey just never gets old. I need a full ass donkey movie. Full ass donkey movie.
There's your title. Full ass.
Full ass. The SpongeBob movie. Now, Josh, I imagine you put this on here too, and I'm not faulting you, because I've seen a number of SpongeBob movies, but every time I've watched them, I've been ripped out of my dome, so I don't know which ones I've seen. Which one? And I've enjoyed all of them for that reason, but which one? What was 2004?
This is the original SpongeBob movie, and it was the original creator. It's like the last thing he did before he got off of the show, so he like put a lot of the jokes he's always wanted to put into the series, into the movie, including David Hasselhoff being a freaking basically jet ski that they ride and have a fight with the man ray on the back of him, like literally David Hasselhoff. So it's stupid funny, but really funny to me. Back in the day, we watched that so much. So
honestly, SpongeBob is way funnier than anybody as an adult ever gives it credit for. It is.
It's so, like to me, it's like just as funny as like old Looney Tunes, but like modernized to me.
Yeah.
So as Trev so poetically put it, when it can be, and the answer to this can be movie, TV show, Flash video from 2003, it can be anything. Like, what do you watch when you're, quote unquote, ripped out of your gourd?
Or down.
Because SpongeBob movie sounds like a solid choice. Like, I've never done that, but that sounds really fun.
I would prescribe a SpongeBob movie for you for your next experience.
Okay.
I personally, my itch is always to grab something nostalgic. I always try to, like, I'm like, I want to watch fucking Under the Umbrella Tree, which is like an obscure Canadian Muppet show that I watched as a kid. And I'll spend like an hour and a half trying to find the right episode too. Like, is that one that I've, I don't know. Or that, or Dumbo Circus, like big scary puppets. I don't know. Something about that really gets me going when I'm fun.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to get like super into your emotions where you're like super high, watch the Goofy movie. That is like the best pick when you're high. Like, you'll feel so much emotion. Like, from such a simple movie.
You'll miss your dad. You'll like Pauly Shore for some reason. It's an experience.
Yes.
I just want to laugh. Like, because I was going to, my thing is Portlandia. That show just hits the right notes of like this, because it's just so stupid. Like the premises of the skits they come up with are so freaking dumb that I can't help but laugh. And I love anything Fred Armisen does. So it's that's usually my go-to. But I was thanks for the suggestions on the other two, though. I will definitely take steps into putting them into action.
Good.
I don't know why I phrased it like that.
It was very formal, but yeah. Report
Thank
back.
You, sir. Thank you so much, sir.
The Incredibles. That's a fun one. I like the
Incredibles.
That's a good
one.
Yeah. The Butterfly Effect. I watched that, and I had this complex for like a week where I was like not wanting to like move a lamp 5 inches because I was like, this could really fuck shit up for me. Really, gotta be careful.
Is that the best thing that Ashton Kutcher's ever been in?
That or those commercials where he did the cameras? Those are pretty good.
Okay. That 70s show.
I mean, that was good.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's good.
I don't really have like strong feelings toward him. He seems fine. Butterfly Effect, though, was pretty good. The Machinist. Now I put this on here. I don't know if you guys have seen this or not.
Yes.
Actually, I have. I haven't seen it.
It's crazy. So it's got Christian Bale in it. Man, I don't remember really much of the plot of the movie, but I remember like, he is so creepily thin and emaciated in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's not long before he does, I think he starts his Batman role. So he ends up swinging like from probably close to 100 pounds to like over 200 of bulk muscle in about, you know, a X number of months, which is crazy to me.
Yeah. It's one of those roles where you have no idea it's Christian Bale even like 5 minutes. Like, you know it's him, but you completely forget. Like, it's the suspension of disbelief is done really, really well. That movie is a freaking mood.
Yes, pretty depressing.
That guy is in a bad spot in his life, and just the way it's shot, how all the colors are just washed out, everything is like kind of that off green, gray, brown color, and it's that movie's just like kind of its own little universe, and I like it for that. But yeah, it's a pretty freaking intense movie.
Yeah, I did a quick Google here just to, because this always blew me away. His diet to get down to the weight he needed to be for The Machinist consisted of one can of tuna and an apple per day, and his 63-pound weight loss is said to be a record for any actor for a movie role. And then he regained the weight in time for his role in Batman Begins the next year.
That's intense. And when you gain that weight back, you can't just like eat. You can't just like go to McDonald's. Like, you have to eat like a lot of like healthy stuff, right? Like fish and asparagus and like,
yeah,
and you just have to eat a ton of it because you can't just like pig out and, yeah, I got the weight back, I feel like shit, but
yeah,
got it back.
This says he went from 180 to 120 pounds on that diet, and then after that movie, within 6 months, he put on 100 pounds for Batman Begins.
Damn.
Just
that is crazy. Yeah, that's really nuts.
That's dedication for sure.
And not recommended. Don't try that at home. Jesus Christ.
Ugh. Yeah, you're not going to want to immediately regret this decision like Ron Burgundy did in Anchorman when he jumped down into the bear pit. How's that for a segue?
That's good.
I saw Anchorman in theaters. I own it on DVD. It's really, really funny. It's really stupid. And I absolutely love how they make fun of, you know, 1970s, 1980s news anchors and how seriously they took themselves, but also how seriously like the city takes news. I don't know if where you guys grew up, but for some reason in Minnesota in the Twin Cities, like, people love their local celebrities. They love like Don Shelby was the guy at WCCO, and there were, like, if you were a weather guy on the news, you were a big deal. Like Paul Douglas and Ken Barlow and Dave Dahl. I think Dave Dahl is still freaking there. That guy's been there for 50 years. But you know, it makes fun of that kind of culture and that, like, why do we take these people seriously when they're basically, they don't live regular lives like we do. But in addition to that, it's all the humor in it is so freaking stupid. And again, just like Napoleon Dynamite, it's very quotable. Like 60% of the time, it works every time.
That escalated quickly.
That escalated quickly. And
I don't know why we're yelling.
I love Lamp. just endless quotables from that. Yeah. And fun, my local weatherman growing up, his name was Garrick Zykin, and he never blinked, and we were all convinced he was a robot from another dimension. Because who fucking names their kid Garrick Zykin? Crazy.
That's great.
National Treasure. We've got to get the Declaration of Independence. We've got to get it.
Mm-hmm. What if we don't?
I guess it stays where it is.
No. That's okay. A fun movie. I like that movie. It's not like the best movie ever, but it's a lot of fun.
It is. It's the definition of a fun movie. We've all wondered. I don't know if we've all wondered it, but like, what an easy idea to be like, let's just make a movie where Nicolas Cage tries to steal the Declaration of Independence. Like, okay, I don't even need a script first. Fuck yeah, green light. Now write it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And then Mean Girls. That's also very quotable and of its time.
Yeah,
very much so.
Spider-Man 2. Josh, you love the game. You gotta love the movie.
It's the best of that trilogy. Yeah, I think that got Alfred Molina in there being all hammy as a freaking Doc Ock. I love his performance in there. He's just the right amount of campy. We got J. Jonah Jameson, you know, hamming up the scene. There's a deleted scene where he has the Spider-Man suit. If you haven't seen that deleted scene, look it up. Spider-Man 2, J. Jonah Jameson scene. It's freaking hilarious. But yeah, that movie's awesome. I think it's one of the best superhero movies ever to me. Like, yeah. And there's a lot of them now. So that's high praise, right?
True. And that was what, 7 Spider-Men ago? A long time ago.
Something like that. Yeah. Maybe more.
The Prisoner of Azkaban movie with the good old, God dang, what's his name? Gary Potter. What's the name of him? God damn it. Who played the. God damn it. What is the name of the prisoner?
Sirius.
Yeah. Gary Oldman.
Yep.
Man, he's like one of my favorite actors, but he's so good at metamorphizing into different people. I just forget his name. He's just I could run into him at the bank and not know it was him.
Can you believe he plays that, and then he plays Commissioner Gordon in the Batman movies? It's like, that's the same freaking guy. Are you serious?
It's crazy. The guy's a shapeshifter. Yeah. Ugh. Anyway, I like that movie. Dawn of the Dead? Zack Snyder, Dawn of the Dead? You like that one, John?
I won't say it's better than the original Dawn of the Dead, but I do think it's kind of like an underrated remake. It's worth watching. Has a lot of good humor, a lot of good kills. It's just the cast is really good. It's a good ensemble, like horror, fun time. You know, I think it's worth a watch. Maybe Zack Snyder's best movie, I would say.
Ooh. Ooh. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Hot takes here.
And then the movie White Chicks, which I didn't add on here, but I did watch it. And I remember we rented it. And maybe I'm ashamed to admit this now, but I think I laughed a lot.
No, it's a funny movie. I put sorry, there's a lot of jokes in there that don't age well. I actually watched it like last year, and it has some funny moments, like Terry Crews being just Terry Crews, you know, really
can't
funny.
Go wrong with Terry Crews,
There's like some really weird humor in here. There's like a bunch of dildo jokes in one scene that I did not remember were in this movie, but they did not cause laughs. I was just like, what is going on? But yeah, it's still like one of those cheesy, like of the times comedies, you know? But yeah, not too bad.
Right on. And then Envy, that's got Jack Black in it, right?
Yeah. So this one, it has a little bit of a story to it. Me and my brothers watched this movie back to back, like, all freaking winter break when it came out. So I don't know why we watched it so many times, but to us, this movie was just hilarious. And it was Jack Black, Ben Stiller in it. Ben Stiller's super like jealous of Jack Black, who invents a spray that you spray on poop in your yard that makes it vanish, vaporize. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's a dumb little comedy, but to me, it has Christopher Walken in it. It's just kind of like just one of those worth a watch because you'll get some chuckles out of it. And it's just such a ridiculous scenario. So I figured I'd shout it out.
Yeah, no, I do remember renting that.
Hi, I'm Michelle from Point and Drink Adventure Podcast. Join me and my friend Pam from YouTube channel Cannot Be Tamed as we drink a little wine and talk about the media we consume. Everything from movies, video games, and even vinyl pickups. Listen on wherever podcasts can be heard and check out our YouTube channel, Point and Drink Adventure, for more extra video recordings of our podcast. Drink well, my friends. Bye.
Let's do another email. Huh?
Yeah. Sounds good.
I got it. We got one here from our friend Jono saying Silverchair in the U.S. He says, good day, drunk friends. On your 95 episode, you talked about Silverchair's You Wait Till Tomorrow.
Yeah.
A fact about that song is that you guys got a different video to us here in Australia. They reshot the whole thing to make it quote unquote more grungy to appeal to the US market, and Silverchair vocalist Daniel Johns was made to dress in a striped shirt to evoke a more Kurt Cobain teen spirit look.
Wow.
I am not surprised. I think I mentioned this on the podcast in an earlier episode. I don't remember which one. It might have been like 95. It might have been 95, 96 when Collective Soul shot the video for Shine.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you guys are going to want like your hair everywhere and wearing flannel shirts and ripped jeans and old t-shirts. And Collective Soul's like, why? That's not how we dress at all. Like, we're not a grunge band.
And we're gonna
shoot
everything in like monochrome and put it over blue and purple. It's going to look like the Blair Witch.
Everything's like out of focus for a second. Then it's back in focus. And then it's like a big close-up of the guy's face. And it's like...
Yeah,
you got to get that look, that specific look. But anyway, Jono continues on the subject of Nirvana. Courtney Love was especially vocal in her dislike, saying, "Who is this kid? He sounds like Eddie Vedder and looks like my dead husband." That's what she's saying about Daniel Johns' Silverchair. Yeah. Anyway, really digging the run through the 90s, and I am living in terror seeing kids bringing the fashion back, but not the grunge fashion. Have a great weekend, Jono.
Right on, man. Sorry, yeah. Jono, it took us so long. We've been out of the 90s for a long time now, but I feel like some of the, I don't know, it's not worn grungily, but a lot of like the flannel look from that era has kind of been around for a little bit. You could maybe draw a parallel there, but like the full-on grunge look where people, you know, with the long hair and more of a slouch and baggier clothes, I mean, it's due a comeback. We're already seeing like college kids in their 80s and 90s get up, so it's almost here.
Are JNCO jeans back? That's my question.
Right, the jeans where it's like if the wind picks up a little bit, you might get carried away. You might be blown off the sidewalk. Yeah. All right. Now, notable events. Now, you guys, 2004, it's a big year because that was the year that the Facebook, not just Facebook, the Facebook launches. Huh? Anybody?
I don't think I got on Facebook until like 2008.
I remember getting on it in 2004 because I think it was sort of...
It was
a college thing, and it was kind of neat at the time because the alternative, obviously, was MySpace, and MySpace had been flooded with, like, I don't know, all the uncles. Like, your family was getting on there, and it was weird. It was like, you know what? I kind of like this Facebook thing because we could just keep it between us college kids, and we see how that turned out.
I feel like that's basically what ends up happening with social media. It's like... everybody's on MySpace, and then old people get on MySpace. Everybody's on Facebook, then old people get on Facebook, you know. So, It's just a ever-going cycle.
It's just kids trying to find the next new thing, and then all the parents find it, and then the kids move on. Yeah.
Pretty much.
I think it's happening with Twitter right now, where my girlfriend's niece, who is 16, she only uses TikTok and I think like Snapchat maybe, but her reaction to Twitter is basically like, "Ew, you use Twitter? Ugh. Like, what? Wrong with you? Ew."
I feel like Twitter is basically just me and you, Alex. Josh sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I tweet every once in a while.
Yeah.
Not saying they're interesting tweets, but I do tweet.
I mean, I make it a purpose that my tweets are not interesting. I think that's my goal. Every tweet.
I'm that's like, what's interesting. The how uninteresting it is makes it interesting, right?
That's the goal. That is the goal.
There you go.
In 2004, Bush beats Kerry. In another election. That was the first election I got to vote in.
Feet to the fire. Ooh. Who'd you vote for?
Who was the third guy?
So we can immediately judge you. Oh, was that when, what's his name? Nader?
Oh, was that?
Around?
Was that Nader? I guess it would have been. I'm not telling you who I voted for. I wrote in, man, I was trying to think. Who's the guy that always runs every year? The like really weird dude from like Maine. His name's like Turbo Sexophonic or something. What is that guy's name?
Oh, doesn't he? Is that the guy that wears the boot on his head?
Yeah, who's that guy?
I forget his name, but I know who you're talking about.
I just Googled presidential boot guy, and it told me the guy's name. That's how incredible Google is. Vermin Supreme.
Presidential boot guy.
Presidential boot guy is Vermin Supreme.
Vermin Supreme.
Yeah.
Man. If his website's not presidentialbootguy.com, yeah. I'm going to be really disappointed.
Or .org. That'd be
.org would make sense, yeah.
Martha Stewart sentenced to prison. I remember that being a big deal.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Now she's best friends with Snoop Dogg,
yeah.
Right?
Her TV show got taken off the air, and that's what upset most people, I think. I don't think it got taken off the air. They just stopped making new episodes, obviously. But,
yeah.
That upset a lot of moms.
And now she's kind of a hero for all that because I think it turned out like she was not really doing anything different than anybody else. I don't really know the story, to be honest. Yeah. I didn't care. I still don't. But
it was a long time ago. It was 2004.
I got no ill will toward Martha Stewart. She's cool in my book. And then most popular TV shows released in 2004. I'm going to say there's three shows here I like a lot. There's Lost, which let's pretend the last season didn't happen, all right? There's Lost, which is pretty good. Came out in 2004. And then House. That was a show I ate up. I loved that show. All the way through the end. Watched the whole gosh dang
thing.
It's never Lupus. What are you talking about?
It's Lupus this time.
This time is Lupus.
Did they ever pay that off with where they actually did have Lupus?
There was a Lupus episode, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Yep.
I'm happy about that.
Makes sense.
No one's ever said they've been happy about it being lupus until today. That was the first time somebody was like, thank God there was some lupus.
Thank God.
And then Battlestar Galactica. That was people like that, too. I didn't watch much of that. Watched a couple episodes. It was pretty good.
Bears, Beats, and Battlestar Galactica. That's all I know about that show. That's the quote from The Office.
Right. That's like third degree knowing about that show. That works out. Alex, did you Lost at any point?
No, not really. I don't know why. I really don't.
It was a
sensation. To remember.
I'm surprised you didn't get in there.
No, not really. Huh. I don't remember what I would have been watching at that point. I was seeing a lot of movies, but I really wasn't watching a lot of TV.
Right.
Playing a lot of video games, that's for damn sure.
Hell yeah.
I have no idea what I would have been watching at that point. Lots of still watching wrestling, that's for sure.
Oh, hell yeah. Josh, did you watch any of these shows?
Lost is good. I watched the first two seasons, I think. I enjoyed it at the time, but I never finished it. That's one I think about going back to a lot, and everybody's like, the ending sucks. It's not worth it, and this and that. So, but maybe I will one day just binge the whole thing again. But I do like House. That's one I just watched like while it was on TV. I never seen it from inception to the end or anything. But when I found an episode of House and watched it, I had a good time. So it's a good show.
Right on, yeah. I did watch All of House. It got a little cringy at some points, but overall it's pretty good. Lost, though, I feel like the collective, you know, in hindsight, people are softening up on that ending. People have gone back and rewatched it and been like, maybe we just had too high of an expectation at the time. and it makes sense now. So there is a bit of a revision going on with the Lost ending. So don't let it sway you. It might be worth your time. Okay. Check it out.
Nice.
And then I couldn't find any, like, what the teens are into. Maybe I'll defer to you, Josh. You were a young guy in 2004. What was the snack food du jour in 2004?
Snack food.
And you're a snack guy. You're the snack lord. I mean, you fucking, right. You're the guy that we should have definitely asked about this. What
it's
do you
true.
Got?
I'm trying to think if Monster Energy Drink came out that year. I feel like it's close to that time. One thing that I was thinking about that we didn't mention that is 2004 is Super Size Me came out. That's related to fast food and food, right?
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah. I'm going to give you points. Yeah. For that.
Good call. Yeah.
That was pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good connection. Monster Energy was 2002. Just missed it.
2002. Just missed it. I don't know. I can't really think of anything specific. I was trying to look this up too. I was like kind of like just Googling, you know, doing my Google foo, but I did not find anything like that stuck out too much from that time, that year specifically. Unfortunately.
Well, I did a real quick Goog just now. 2004 was also the year that 5-Hour Energy came out.
Oh yeah, I was scared of those.
Oh,
when
I
those
forgot
came
about
out.
That stuff. Do they still make that?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all over like checkout counters still.
Yeah, if you go to a convention, I've been to many conventions that have like a 5-Hour Energy booth, and then people will just go by and grab a 5-Hour Energy because they just give them away there. Like that's happened to me at two of the comic conventions in Houston. When I did PAX South, there was a 5-Hour Energy booth, and I ended up with like 5 or 6 in my bag by the end of the whole thing. I didn't drink them all in one day, but you know.
Oh, thank God! Yeah. I have tried one before because I used to have a job where I had to travel a lot at night, and you get drowsy. And I was like, I gotta do something. And I tried one of them, and I gotta say, it worked pretty well. I was awake, but not like jittery or nervous or anything like that, as advertised. I gotta say, I don't really want to use them outside of that though. I don't want to like become reliant on it, but. Yeah, it seems like a lot of energy drinks came out that year. Full Throttle that year.
Oh, yeah. Full Throttle's good. I know our boy Steve likes Full Throttle. He mentioned that to me before.
All right. Well, that's 2004. But also, 2004 was the year of like, the Atkins diet. The low-carb fad was a really big deal. Look out for... Don't drink... Don't eat carbs. Stay away from carbs. Was something that
but
was
I like
great.
Carbs.
I'm right. That's like my favorite of the arbs. It's my favorite arb. It's carbs. But I remember that being like a thing that like, you know, once they kind of went back on it and been like, well, you got to have some carbs, you'll die. People still to this day are still like hard boiled in that mindset of like, I thought carbs are bad. Like, well, no, not all carbs and not like some carbs. But that mindset really affected a lot of people.
Yeah, they just call it keto now, right? That's what they just basically push it to. Yeah, same thing, same idea.
That's right. Yeah. Now, notable books. Now, I couldn't, there was a list of books that like adults would read in 2004, but I thought they were boring. So I listed two that I thought were pretty cool. One is the Death Note manga, which everyone knows more about the anime than the book, but I actually have the whole collection of the manga and it's pretty sweet.
Really?
So that, yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
And then the Walking Dead comic book, which I also enjoy. Some people are kind of, you know, you might like the show better, you might like the comic book better, they diverge at one point, but what I read, I liked.
I like the Walking Dead comic quite a bit. It's pretty good. Like, I am not fully caught up. I never got to the ending, but I read, I think, the first 2 or 3 compendiums of that and had a great time with it. So it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently, though, the first, I guess, volume of comics are real expensive these days of that set. So if you have one,
sell them.
Give it to me.
It's like probably like a low print.
Give it to me. Even better.
Well, that's, you know, we're at the end of our list for 2004. We've done all the emails. We've chatted up all the 2004. Now this is the point where we move on and we make way for 2005. So before we go, is there any lasting thoughts about 2004 you want to share on this year podcast? All right, court is adjourned. We're done with it. Fuck.
You know, to be totally honest, my life was not that great in 2004. So I
can't say I have that many great memories, but I do have great memories about Paper Mario 2, Thousand-Year-Old Door, and some
like
of the great games
call
that came out.
Thousand-Year-Old Door. I think it's just Thousand-Year Door, but I'll never now not call it Thousand-Year-Old Door.
Is it really just Thousand-Year Door?
I
it's
kind of so.
Like Donkey Kong Country 2, where it's like
Diddy's Kong Quest.
It's a play on Diddy's Kong Quest instead of Diddy Kong's Quest.
Oh, no shit. I'm learning that today. That was the first time
really?
I knew
wow.
that. Wow. Holy shit.
That one always blew my mind, too. But I always make sure to get that one right, and I'm always going to get Thousand-Year-Old Door wrong every time.
Thousand-Year-Old Door just sounds like a weird, like, Mad TV sketch or something. I don't know. It's like... That's like a character. Like, oh, look, it's Thousand-Year-Old Door. Hi, everybody. I'm an old door. I swing both ways.
Is that that Fable voice again?
Yeah. Chicken Chaser. That's me. That's me. All right. Well, Josh, it was great having you on, man. Thanks for swinging by. We'll certainly have you on again sometime.
Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, dude.
I had a lot of fun. Thank you. For putting up with me for a couple hours here. Also, I want to mention, I think 2004 is when I had my first kiss. I'm pretty sure it's 2004.
Wow.
So that's put that in there. That's cool.
There you go. Late bloomer.
It's 14 years old. I was at a movie theater watching Hitch. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, okay.
Hitch.
That's a callback.
Of course,
now.
Hitch.
Yeah.
Very good. It came full circle. I appreciate that. Awesome.
I always ask people where they had their first kiss, because mine was on a giant mountain of dirt, and I just love telling people that. That's all.
Well, now I got questions. What year was it? What was going on? Why was there a big mound of dirt?
It was 98, I think, and we were just driving around bored, because it's 1998, we're teenagers, it's the summer, there's nothing to do. So we seriously were just like, wouldn't it be cool if we just like went and sat on that giant mountain of dirt? And she was like, yeah, that'd be pretty cool. So just pulled over and just walked right up and sat down and just started talking.
Man.
And yeah, it's pretty funny.
The late 90s were just different. You know, remember people would just cruise? Like that was a fun thing to do, was just like get in your car and drive around and just waste gas.
Yeah, it's waste gas in your freaking 1985 Plymouth Reliant. That's what you really want to do.
good stuff. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up here. So that's been another Drunk Friend podcast. Now, you can head on over to polymedianetwork.com. We got more podcasts over there, such as the aforementioned IndieQuest that our guest Josh not only created, but is a valuable member of. You can go over there and check that out. We've also got Tales of the Lesser Medium, Polykill, Point and Drink Adventure, Uncle Doug's DVD Bin, We Got Goosebumps, and occasionally an off-kilter episode from time to time. You can also send an email to the show, just like our pals Brandon and Jono did today at drunkfriendpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get to them eventually. We have a subreddit. You know you like Reddit, you pervert. Get on over there, get in our subreddit. You can comment directly about the show.
Why are you insulting people?
I'm also a Reddit pervert. I'm on there all the time. I can't stay away from the damn place. It's crazy. Get on over there, leave a comment. Talk to us a little bit. Podcasts, you don't get to leave direct feedback. You can on the Reddits. Try it that way. What else we got here? That's it. That's all. That's
no,
it.
You're supposed to. Did you mention that? Okay. So the subreddit here is new.
The subreddit, R Polymedia. If you know how to get over there, get over there.
Yeah. And if you're not interested in sending an email, not a big deal. Just give us a rating and review on a podcast app of your choice, and that'll help us out big time.
You can follow us on social media if you'd like to, all right? I'm at Trap Plays Games. Alex, he's at Snest Drunk. And Josh, where can they find you on the internet?
At Frenic Society on Twitter. Where you can find me tweet about uninteresting things with Travis.
And the track you hear was composed by our friend Coolor and is called Electric Starbound. So you can find a link to more of his music on the Buzzsprout podcast page. Shout out to Josh Leslie.
Oh, he did it!
For our thirst quenching logo.
Yes. He did it, man.
I was nervous. I stumbled on Buzzsprout. I called it Buzzsprout. I was nervous. Hands are sweating. Knees are weak. But I got it. Yeah. Got it. I got through it.
Man. Josh, what were you thinking during that? Were you thinking he's going to fuck it up? What am I going to say to him? I got to defend my name.
No, I think it's a fun little bit you do. I'm sure you don't actually mess it up that much, right?
Every time, actually, that was the first time, Josh. That was that. It took 104 episodes, and for you to be here, for him to nail it.
Okay,
we're doing a bit. It's like I can't say your name, Josh Leslie. Like my mouth does not want to move in those consonants and vowels.
I do want a compilation of all 103 times of Alex trying his best. Just want that.
I've gotten a few right, but my batting average is probably like 210.
Yeah, you're like a Ray Durham of hitting that.
Nah, I'm a Mike Redmond. I'm backup catcher. I can't be in the everyday starting lineup.
Be sure to catch us on YouTube or podcast. And thanks for listening.
And we hope you have a great rest of your day. Cheers.